Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm just getting over Valentine's Day, getting ready for President's Day. I mean, what the heck? How many holidays can we have? I mean, you know, I'm all for them, but, you know, two in a row. And then, of course, right after the Super Bowl, you know, they had the school was out because they had recovery day for the children.
What?
How do little children need to recover from a sports event like that? How? I mean, now the parents might have a problem because they've yelled all day long.
Yeah.
But how about little kids? I don't think they're in bad enough shape they need to take the day off.
No. I mean, what do they need the day off for? That should be an adult.
Them the day off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they gave them the day off, said it was recovery day.
Yeah. I mean,
I never heard of such.
Me either. Why? See, that's an adult holiday that apparently now has been given to children. So maybe, I mean, it's always been a thing that, you know, on the Monday after, a lot of people call in sick because they don't feel good the next day.
I did not know that. I hadn't thought about it. But you're probably right. You know, they've had too much to eat, too many chicken wings. I wonder how many million chicken wings were eaten at the Super Bowl.
Oh, geez. I'd love to know that. Wow, I can't imagine.
My family ordered 40.
Really?
40.
For how many people?
Six.
That's not bad. I mean,
three of them are kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
So what does that tell you?
I don't know.
Four people having chicken wings that many. That's a lot of chicken wings.
It is a lot of chicken wings, although there isn't much meat on there.
Yeah.
That's how they
get you.
Someone
said it's like a fluffy... a chicken nugget, you know?
It is.
You know? But you have all your sauces, you have all that. So I guess that's the fun part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I used to love to... I hadn't made hot wings in a long time. But boy, yeah, that's the one day you get pizza, you get wings, you get chips, you get all the stuff you're not supposed to have. And then before the game even starts, you're full and sleepy. And you don't want to do anything because it starts
at like...
everybody's
asking you, you know, who are you for? You know, I mean, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then how about the halftime theatrics?
That was something.
That Bad Bunny deal was really bad. I don't know of anybody that watched it. Everybody watched the Turning Point deal. It was great. It was fabulous. You know, Kid Rock is fabulous. I like him a lot. I like the other singers. And how about the girl that sang the national anthem? She was actually really good.
Yes. And people will talk about that forever, you know, who was good and who really butchered it. She was
great.
That's right.
And, you know, years ago, two or three years ago, and I don't remember who the girl was, you know, she was screeching, and she was so bad, everybody was embarrassed.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was, but I remember the incident because people talked about it for a long time.
Yeah, they did. I mean, that made your ears bleed from what I remember.
Yes, it did, and everybody was saying, why would they let her out there? She can't even sing. Couldn't carry a tune, and then her voice broke. It was too high notes for her. And this girl did a superb job.
Yeah.
It was very good. She had a beautiful voice. And I was shocked that she was using her guitar.
Yeah. I mean...
You know, usually they have canned music, but she didn't.
Yeah, it was just her and the guitar all by herself.
All by herself. And she did a beautiful job, and it was very pretty. But I think maybe the parents needed Monday off, which they probably didn't get because they'd yelled so much. You know, when you're yelling for a team and, you know, you're up and down and all this other, you know, it's hard on you.
Yeah. It's almost exercise all in itself.
That's exactly right. And, you know, a lot of people had Super Bowl parties.
Yeah.
So you had to clean up after all those people left.
Oh, yeah. And it's not.
And everybody forgets about that. Somebody has to clean up.
Yeah. In some ways, it's worse than Thanksgiving cleanup because
people don't
care.
That's right. And, you know, I was told on Monday morning there was 100 private jets that flew out of there. 100 private jets.
Really?
That tells you the wealthy people were there.
Wow. I didn't know that.
100 private jets.
Jeez.
I was in shock. I didn't even think about, you know, I guess I didn't think about any of them being there. And there was 100 private jets.
Wow. It probably a traffic jam at the airport, let alone the cars.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. I imagine all those people had to get back to their businesses, and so they were lining up Monday morning to get out of there.
Yeah. Wow. I have never heard any statistics about private jets and all that at the game. Never. Yeah, I had no idea 100. It was that big.
That is a tremendous amount of people.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, can you imagine?
Boy,
the jet
boy.
Streams from that.
Yeah. Wonder how long you had to sit on the runway for that one. Woo.
I don't know, but if there's 100, I guarantee it took some time to get them out of there.
Yeah. I'd probably be impatient if I was like number 75.
Just... Yeah, and then that's in between your commercial jets.
Yeah. They got to fit those in between. So yeah. That's another challenge.
Woo. And some of them might have went to private airports. I don't know about that, but it didn't sound like it. It sounded like they were at the big airport.
Yeah. And even if they, you know, even if they're at the private airports, I mean, still, you've got, I would imagine there's probably not that many private jets that fly in the same airspace when all these other jets are going out. So I would imagine probably just having all of them concentrated in the same place at the same time, even just like just the airspace, even once they got off the ground, just flying around up there in the air, I would imagine that would have been probably pretty tricky as well.
Imagine it was busy. I'll just put
it
that
was busy.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be with the pilots that were trying to negotiate that. You know, I mean, you know, I wouldn't have wanted to be there. I don't think I'd want to participate in that.
No. No. So apparently everybody got home and everybody got, I guess, recovered.
Recovered, sounds like, you know.
Wow.
It's a good thing that only happens once a year.
I know it. Jeez. Could you imagine if it was like a whole like series of games, but it's just like the one, you know, I mean, like the World Series, you got like seven of them. And so people are going to all the different games and then, you know, and that's kind of a mess. But this is, and I saw people watching this from like all around the world. I mean, they had pictures of, you know, parties in like Brazil and UK and Spain and all these different places. And they're all watching it. So apparently it's big all around the world, even if it's like, I don't know, the middle of the night wherever people are on the other side of the planet, they're still watching it. So it's not even
I didn't think about that. I thought it was just Americans that would be watching it because it's an American sport. I had no idea that people around the world were watching.
I didn't
That's
either.
Neat.
Yeah. It just showed up and I said, wow, look at this. And then it had all these different countries that were, and it's like, I mean, they're probably not as into it as we are, but big Super Bowl parties and all these people just sitting there cheering and they're like having a great time. And it's like, I had no idea. It was kind of cool. So
it is cool that an American sport is that popular.
Yeah. I kind of like that. Of course, we still argue about, you know, the name football because people over in Europe have soccer is football and then we have football is football. And so, you know, there's that big rivalry of just the name itself. But, you know, the game is and here in Texas, this is what we do. I mean, we have football in our blood. It's in our veins. It's why we get up in the morning, really. Any kind of football.
It is that way. I mean, it's a sad thing to say, but it is football country.
Yeah, this is what we do. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
So I assume you probably did not need a recovery day on Monday, did you? Or...
I did not need a recovery day. I mean, you know.
So you went on.
I did not do that much football, you know. I was in and out. I didn't just sit there like people and eat all afternoon, you know, late in the afternoon and stay with the deal. Yeah. I would go and do something else and come back.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of like check in every once in a while and see what's happening and then, you know, whatever else. But, I mean, it wasn't I wasn't for either team. I really didn't care when it came down to it. But, you know, it was shocking to see, like, there was, like, no penalties, I think, in the first half, almost. It was just such a low-scoring game. It was such a close game for a long time. And it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of like a game, and it wasn't like a blowout. It wasn't, I don't know, it was just kind of weird. So
it's not like back in the day when the Cowboys were playing.
Oh, no.
I mean, back in the day, you know, they were America's team and they were hot.
Yeah.
I mean, they were so great. They had the biggest stars. I remember all of them, Staubach, all of those.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's a shame that the football has changed a lot. Most of the time now, everybody doesn't even know all the football players.
Oh, I know it.
On the teams. You know, they're not that important names. You know, it's changed a lot.
Yeah, they don't stand out. So since you were in and out, just kind of like capturing little bits and pieces here and there, like the little highlights, and then you went into work on Monday. Did anything exciting happen this week? Or
we've had a lot of maturities this week.
Really?
You know, we had some, you know, couple weeks ago, and now we've had another three.
Oh,
so a lot of people are going to get paid. Some of them are little policies and one's large, but every dollar counts. And some people were in two this week.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is great, and they will appreciate that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. So
we're working on some policies. We haven't won anything this week, but we're bidding on some policies, and you know, they're short term, you know, got like a 36-38% profit. So, you know, they're good policies. I think they'll be fairly short, and we're just trying to win them.
Did you say 36-38% profit?
Yes.
That's spectacular.
I think it's very good. We'll see if we get them. You know, when we're bidding, remember, we're bidding against some of the really biggest companies, and they can drive that profit down to where sometimes we can't even buy it, you know. But, you know, another thing happens. We were bidding on policies earlier in the year in 25, and we just turned them down. You know, it was getting too high. And, you know, those policies are coming back. Nobody bought them.
Really?
Yeah, we've had two or three. They've reintroduced, and I guess they don't remember that our memory's very good. You know, they think, well, we'll just see if we can put this out again and see if we can get her to buy it the second go around.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to play hardball, or are you going to skip it?
We're not buying them. We didn't buy them the first time. I guarantee you, the second time around's not going to be any better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I always wonder what happens in those kinds of situations when people think, oh, we'll just, you know, play hardball. We'll get, you know, the most out of it we can. We'll shop it around. Nobody bites. And then are they a little bit more humble when they come back, or do they think, let's do it again? You know, first time we failed, let's try a second time.
That's right. I mean, you know, these people, well, they have expectations as to what they can get for their policy. That's what's wrong. And they think they're going to get a fortune, and it just doesn't work, because the people that are buying it have got to make some profit. And, you know, when you try to take all the profit for yourself as an owner, it's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, most people, if they can make 26% or 36%, our clients, you know, that's enough. The owner sometimes wants to get 80%.
Oh,
you can't do that. It won't work. The numbers don't work.
Yeah. Oh, my
word. You know,
word.
There wouldn't be any profit left for anybody if you paid the owner of the policy 80%.
So is it just that they don't know how it works? Maybe it's their first time, or do they think that they're slick?
Well,
and they can...
you know, it's their first time because it's a life insurance policy, so they obviously don't have another one. Most of the time, anyway. So they just have expectations that are too high.
Mm. Yeah. Boy, I don't know. I would imagine probably if it was me, because I have some self-control problems sometimes. So, okay. Like in Vegas, I don't know when to stop, but you okay. know when, you know, it's going up too high and it's like, uh-oh, we're getting close to that threshold. This is, if we keep going, this is not going to become profitable. And you've got that line there where you know not to cross, no matter how aggressive maybe the bidding gets and how tight it gets, you still know when to stop so that it still
is profitable.
That's right,
and they will ask us lots of times, what is your final bid? They'll say, what is your final? So we give them what our top price is. This is it. We're out if it doesn't work. We're out.
So that's
what happens.
You don't give your final thing the first time around, I would assume.
Oh, no, you can't do that. Because when you first start bidding, you don't know where it's going to go. It might stay low. Sometimes it does. But if it's medium price, we're going to be there. But when it gets real high, we're going to drop out and let them have it.
Wow.
Because if they don't make anything, why have they bought it?
Well, yeah, exactly. So then let me ask you this, and I've never been on that side before. So just kind of if you can peek behind the curtain a little bit. So how does it work? So does it like go around like once and then everybody has?
Oh, no, it goes many times. Usually it's a 2-week or a week bid.
Oh,
yeah, and they'll tell us up front usually. Now, the bidding stops on this day.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes it's quicker, and they'll say, this is a short, short bid. You know, we need your bid today. At 5 o'clock, we're stopping. Whoever gets it by 5 gets it.
Is it a
Sometimes it's short, and the owner says, I have to have the money right away. I need you to bid it or walk away. So, you know, we'll say, okay, this is what we can do. And then they're out there at the end, they'll say, can you come up another $5,000? And we'll say, we'll look and see, you know, if we can do it or not.
Yeah. I mean, you still have to weigh the profitability aspect.
That's right. If the client doesn't make any money, he's not going to do it.
No.
You know, we know about what they have to make.
So is it like a blind bid or is it like going to the track where, you know, you see where everybody is at and, oh, somebody bid more, so we're going to outbid them? Or can you do that, or is it just?
The company will come back and tell us what the high bid is.
Oh.
And say, do you want to go up? And a lot of times we'll say, who are we bidding against? And they'll tell us. If it's a lot of people, then it doesn't matter. But if it's just one other company, we know how they're going to bid.
Interesting.
Because they have all the money in the world.
I had no idea. I know that it's a complicated process, and I know that you have, you know, numbers that you go in. It's like, okay, we are not going past this, but I didn't really know, I guess, how it actually you know, went behind the scenes. So that's kind of neat.
When they come to us with a policy wants to bid, they'll say, here is the life expectancy, here is the medical. So we're going to read the medical and then look at it and see what they say. If it says he's playing golf, remember I always say that, he's not sick enough for us to buy his policy.
Yeah.
If he's in radiation and chemotherapy, yes. But if he's not doing any of that, you know, it's probably not a policy we would want.
Yeah. You're not only looking at numbers, you're looking at lifestyle as well.
That's right. You have to look and see how sick they are. And if it says they've, you know, had surgery, they didn't get it all, that's a good sign. If they say it has already spread too far, we cannot operate, that's a great sign. If they say, you know, it's down his lungs, his hips, and maybe the pelvis, that's a great policy. Because there isn't any way you're going to survive that.
Are there?
So if it hadn't metastasized, it's not as good a policy.
When you're looking at the type, is there certain policies that you'll go more aggressively for? Or does it just?
If it's pancreatic, we will bid high. Because pancreatic cancer is so short.
Yeah, you
people just don't survive it.
You got the list of those that generally come in early. And so I would imagine probably those are, I don't know what to call it, but other than like the hot list or something like that. These are the policies that usually come in early. These are the policies that investors love. These are the ones that we fill quickly. And I'm sure there's some kind of, even if it's not a formal list, but, you know, some kind of something in the back of your head is like, ah, this is one of those. So we'll pay a little bit different attention to this particular kind.
Right. And, you know, the age has a lot to do with it. You know, we don't want to do anybody over 74.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a hard lesson on that. We learned that old people, and God bless them, they are going to outlive us.
Yeah, they are.
You know, I mean, I hate to say that, but they're going to outlive me and you because they just keep on trucking.
Yeah.
You know?
They're tough old birds.
They are tougher than we ever thought about being. I mean... and we're still waiting on Mr. Denton, and we talk about that all the time. Yeah. We don't know if he's ever going to go.
No.
And I know that the Lord wanted him in heaven sometime back. He's just refusing to go.
Yeah. The earth will explode or crash into the sun before that happens, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I figure his wife's going to go now before him. You know, she's 88. I mean, you know, when somebody's 93 and got as much money as he's got and done all the things he's done to prevent dying, it's just shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking. I mean, you know, when we're advised that he's passed away, I'll be the most shocked person in the whole wide world.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, I mean, we had it made 2 years ago. We knew he was dying. We knew everything was going. And I'll be dadgum, lo and behold, they did a valve replacement on a 92-year-old. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, they wouldn't have done that for anybody else in the whole wide world.
Oh, no. No, that's too big of a risk. So I don't know how they did that. I guess if you pay somebody enough, they'll do just about anything, I guess.
Well, yeah, and, you know, most people in the 70s, they wouldn't even do that for them.
Oh,
you know?
No. Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't do it.
And what's he now? He's 93 now?
He's 93 now, and they said they thought he would live 2 years after having that done. So we're going to see.
We'll see.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
If we ever get on and you say, I have an update on the Denton policy, I'm going to fall out of my chair.
I will, too, and people on the radio will probably pass out. They'll say, oh, my gosh, we're going to get our money out of this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the first policies we ever did.
Yeah.
We were just starting out, and they sold us this policy. And we were not sophisticated enough to know, you know, what could happen. And it took a long time to learn.
Yeah. I mean, you have learned, and not only from that one, and I know we, you know, joke about it, and it's funny, but, you know, it really is. It kind of shows how far you've come since you first started doing this. And now the technology,
right,
the data, the I mean, everything that you have to work with, it's so advanced, maybe?
Much better, yes.
Yeah, much better.
It is advanced. The life expectancy reports are real. They're a lot better. Those people were just sloppy on the first ones. They're not sloppy anymore. They're doing a lot better job.
Yeah. And you know,
so
the things.
The LEs are real. I mean, you know, we can rely on them, in other words.
Yeah. So anybody that may have maybe been in one of those original policies and maybe has kind of slowed down or hasn't really been quite as active for investing, it's a very different game now than what it used to be. Which is, I mean, it's true for anything. I mean, whether it's, you know, like we were talking about football before. You know, look at how football was, you know, when it first started, and look what it is now. Completely different. Everything,
that's right,
you know, changes and gets better. So anybody that's been kind of maybe sitting on the sidelines kind of thinking, I'm not really sure I want to get fully invested, you know, back again. It is a very different game, and it has really gotten a lot better.
Well, and a lot of these people now that they've made some money in their portfolios this week, now would be a good time to take that money out and get it over here where everything is, you know, guaranteed, that their principals always say that it can't go down. That way they won't ever lose any of that profit they've made, because they made some profit this week. They need to keep that profit, put it in some life settlements or some annuities where they know they'll have it. Yeah. I would recommend highly, now that they've made their profit, and I don't know what age they are, but it'd be a good time at any age to get that profit out and get it stabilized, where now that you've got it, it will never go down.
Yeah. And speaking of annuities, I'm glad you brought that up, because, well, let me ask, is the 16% bonus still 16?
Yes, we've still got that bonus going. I hope they'll keep it for a while. Everybody loves it. So, you know, like you say, if they're getting ready to retire, or if they're just older, you know, 60 years old or older, now would be a good time to put it in either one. The annuity, of course, is safe. You know, it's the safest thing we've got on earth, because your principal's guaranteed. It's got a great return every year. You can take up to 10% a year out, or you can take nothing out. You don't pay any taxes till you take it out. It's all tax deferred until you take it out. So that there isn't anything you can do that's tax deferred.
Yeah,
like this.
I can't think of anything. And so, and then we're also talking about compound interest.
It is compound interest, and it's paid once a year. At the end of the year, it locks your interest in. Whatever you've made during the year, it's not going anywhere. It's locked in. You get your money.
Yeah, you know, you look at like the stock market, and when you say, you know, it's locked in, I don't think you can say that phrase with any kind of other investment, like, you know, like the stock market or real estate or anything else you can think of. There's not really anything else that will protect your principal like an annuity. From what I can think of anyway, and I'm trying real hard to come up with something to poke holes in it.
I don't know anything, because real estate can go down. You know, when you have bad years, it can go down. It can go up, especially if you have rental property. You know, you can lose your shirt. Sometimes it's steady and goes along. But then if things go wrong, like a big tenant moves out, you know, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And we've had all these companies this last year that did go out. And, of course, that rent goes to zero when those big companies go out of business.
Yeah.
So, you know, an annuity is much safer than real estate, I believe, and it's consistent, and they've got like billions and billions of dollars behind them. So you know that your money's always safe. It's always right there. They're A-rated. You know, they're rated by every agency in the world. So I would highly recommend an annuity for someone in their 60s or above, or even 50. You know, and if they're getting ready to retire in 5 years, they're going to an annuity now, your money is going to grow faster because it is tax deferred.
Yeah. You basically set it and forget it. It doesn't take a lot of input, or, you know, you don't have to interact with it. It's there.
You don't have to be a genius.
No. You don't have to be a genius. You know, that reminds me, you had mentioned real estate a second ago. I had read something, and I think it was a couple of different states that had, I'm trying to remember this now. I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, but something about people who owned Airbnbs, they were getting them shut down because of new laws. And
oh no, I didn't know that.
Yes, it was something.
There's a lot of them throughout the United States.
I know it. I saw something. The same thing happened in Spain the other day. Something like 86,000 illegal Airbnbs were closed in Spain. But I think there was a couple of states over here that had passed laws and some kind of regulation. And I don't know if it was like a second unit on the property or some kind of, I don't know, some kind of regulation. But now a ton of Airbnb owners can't rent those out that they were.
That's bad.
I know.
Yeah, because they were using that as a cash cow.
Yes. And so now they're stuck with a building or a house that they can't rent out for vacationers for whatever reason. And so I would imagine that's probably going to hurt a lot of people as well.
Yeah, because if you're renting it by the night, which they do, you lose that nightly income.
Yeah.
You're in trouble because the monthly income ain't going to be near what you're making on those B&B deals.
Yeah, and a lot of people will take, like, especially the big houses, they'll have, like, you know, families of, you know, 5, 7, 10. They'll have family reunions at these things, and now a lot of them can't rent them out. And that's big. I mean, when they stay for, you know, a week for a family reunion, that's a lot of cash in a big hurry, and now they're kind
of
stuck
with
the property.
That is a lot of cash. My family was in one a year ago in New Mexico, and they loved it. It was really nice. It was well kept. Everything was there. Everything was clean. It was nice, and they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So that's all I know about them, is that they do rent them by the night, or like you say, a big family reunion maybe for a week. So that would really hurt the industry if several of the states shut those down.
Yeah. So I wonder what kind of fallout that'll have. And that's not something that I don't think anybody, that was on anybody's radar for those things kind of happening.
No, I can't imagine that they would say, you know, they can't rent them out because they've been doing it all this time. So they've probably passed some kind of new zoning law.
That's probably what it is. Yeah, I have to go. I should have kept it and wrote down notes or something, because I'm really kind of summarizing the best I can to my memory. But I know that they had shut down a bunch of them. And I think you're right, though. I think it probably did have to do with zoning laws or something. So
yeah, I believe it is.
Even when people,
I just hadn't heard about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, annuities, you know, they're great because they pay good. They give you that bonus up front, and you add that to your policy. The other thing is, let's say that you want to convert to a Roth, and you have to pay the taxes up front. Well, this bonus will offset that taxes.
Mm.
And then, of course, you don't ever pay again taxes on, you know, a Roth. You can take money out all the rest of your life. It's tax-free. Because you paid the taxes up front. There's a lot of advantages to Roth. Not everybody has a Roth, but sometimes they'll have a Roth and an IRA. Or you can convert, you know, part of it to a Roth. So there's all kinds of things you can do. And this bonus will offset that cost.
Do you recommend one over the other, like Roth versus not, you know, paid taxes up front or on the back side? Or is it just
it
really personal
your
preference?
Situation. Yeah, it's a personal preference. If you want to have a Roth, or if you want to have both, or if you want to leave it in an IRA. The IRA is not taxable till you take it out. It's tax deferred. There's a lot of advantages to that. The Roth advantage is you don't ever pay taxes again, and you can take it out, you know, anytime you want. So it's yours to do as you would please. So there are two different things, you know, and lots of people do it one way and some prefer the other. But there's not anything, I don't think, that measures up to an annuity, because these are not variable annuities. These are fixed index annuities. So you don't take that chance of it going down.
Yeah, you protect
and
your principal.
You can have something that if you protect that principal, you're always okay.
I know that's one of the things that you always talk about is there's two things. If in listening to you all these years, there's two things that I've taken away. One, protect your principal, and two, diversify. And
that's
it
right.
Sounds like whether it's we're talking about life settlements or annuities, you really hit both of those on the head. I mean, it you know, check. And so you're really essentially good to go, because with annuities, you don't have to wake up, you know, tomorrow morning and say, do we have anything left? Because if, say, the stock market crashes on Monday, pretend, people wake up in an annuity, you don't have to worry about losing everything. You're fine because of that stopgap. So
that's right. And there's so many advantages to both. If you've got a life settlement, you know, it makes quite a bit more money. It's a good investment. And then you take the annuities, and it's a different animal altogether. It'll give you income the rest of your life. You know, you can take so much a year out, or you can say, I don't want to take anything for 4 or 5 years. I want to leave this for my grandchildren or my wife, and we don't need it right now. I've got several people retiring right now, and some of them are raising their grandchildren. I keep forgetting about this We have several people that have taken their grandchildren to raise. You know, it's happening all the time. So they want to leave something for that grandchild to go to college and to get them started in line. So they're taking out their annuities and doing it that way and making them the beneficiary. So there's so many things you can do. And let's say you've got a child that's always been in trouble, been on drugs, been in trouble. You don't want them to have anything. You can do an annuity, and it separates the money out of your estate. There's no probate on annuities.
Hmm. So they can't.
There's so many advantages, yes.
They wouldn't be able to come back later and say, oh, they left me out. I'm entitled to this. You can't contest
yeah.
it. It's
no.
in stone.
So an annuity is separate from your estate, and that's the great thing. Now, let's say that you pass away, and the family needs some fast cash, and everything's tied up in probate. You can get the money out of an annuity real quick.
Hmm.
You can make a withdrawal. And there's just a lot of things you can do with an annuity you can't do with other things.
Now you
and if you've got, let's say you've got a life settlement with us, and you've got a lot of cash in your account, it makes almost 4% all the time. It's just sitting there. It's not a money market account. It just, they pay you interest on your money. They never just don't pay you.
That's
so
rare.
You've got that income coming in while you're waiting to put money in another policy. And there's a lot of people, like you said, they're sitting on the sidelines. But, you know, the people that are not sitting on the sidelines have made a lot more money.
Yeah.
Because they were consistent. Even though they had some policies go over, they stayed with it. They got those in. They were late, but the other policies were on time. So it made up the difference.
Yeah. I mean, even just running the simple math, you know, you can say, okay, say somebody who's in 10 policies had two of them go over and eight were either on time or early. Say then you had somebody who was in 5 policies and 2 went over. Well, then they're probably feeling it. They're probably saying, oh, wow, you know, whereas, you know, just getting in and being like we were talking about before, diversified in as many policies as possible, then it's a much lower percentage and people just end up making more money. And then when a policy matures, reinvest it. And then another policy matures and reinvest it. And it sounds like it kind of becomes this snowball of just profit and money that people can reinvest and use that money to make more money. And so, I mean, even just running simple numbers, it does make sense to be as diversified as possible. So that's really
the
key.
And they need to be diversified. You can't go in and just buy one policy or put all of your money in one policy. That's foolish. You've got to have money in several different policies. And it'll work out.
Yeah. If people have never done a life settlement before, if they're looking at this as I'm going to get into one policy and then I'm going to retire, that's not how the thing is set up. It's really designed to do this over a number of years. And now you don't have to do it for 40 years. You know, it's not like, no. Oh, I should have started when I was 15. And now I'm in trouble. No, that's not it at all. Because it does. It adds up very, very quickly. You know, and like you were pointing out before, you're looking for shorter policies. These are not policies that are, you know, expected to mature in 20 or 30 years. You know, you're looking for those shorter maturities. And so that's the whole point. That's, you know, shorter maturities, reinvest, and then it just keeps going from that. And when you look at your most successful investors, that's exactly the plan that they have followed. So it just makes a whole lot of sense. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Well, it's a story of Bessie Love. Bessie Love is from Midland, Texas.
Ooh.
Her name was Juanita Horton, and she was a silent stream actress. She was born in 1898, and she was a young girl, very gorgeous, one of the most gorgeous girls you've ever seen. So she played little girls before we ever had sound. She was a silent actress. You know, her father was a cowboy and bartender there in Midland, Texas. Her mother worked and managed restaurants. She attended school in Midland until she was in the eighth grade. Then her family, they go off to Arizona, New Mexico. Finally, they settled in California, and Hollywood beckoned her. Her father became a chiropractor, and her mother worked for a knitwear company, bathing suit company. And in 1915, she was a student at Los Angeles High School, and she went to the set of a film, and she was going to meet actor Tom Mix.
Ooh.
And he had told her, if you'll come visit me, I'll get you into pictures. However, when she got there, Mix was not there that day. So they said, well, you need to meet with the film director, D.W. Griffin. He placed her under personal contract immediately.
Really?
Then he decided her name was too long. Horton was just too long for theater marquees, and it was too difficult to pronounce. And they said, well, we're going to give her the name of Bessie Love. Bessie because any child can pronounce it, and Love because we want everyone to love her.
Oh, wow, neat.
Oh. So she dropped out of high school to pursue her film career, and she got her diploma even in 1919. And her first role in 1916 was Intolerance. It was her first performance and the first film made with Fine Arts Company Intolerance is the only film that this guy actually directed that took her on. And her first role of importance was in The Flying Torpedo, 1916. And then she played in Argonne with Douglas Fairbanks, in The Good Man, Bad Man, and The Mystery of the Leaping Fish. and she was doing supporting roles to her first starring role in A Sister of Six. That was in 1916. And they likened her to Mary Pickford. You remember Mary Pickford?
Yes. You know,
what a big star she was. And they called her Our Mary. They loved this little girl. And she played little girls all the time. And in 1918, she left the fine arts for a better contract with a different company. And she was receiving great reviews. But they were showing her at smaller theaters, you know, not the great big screen. And so then she wanted to play a grown-up girl and not little girls anymore. So she took an active role in the management of her career. And this was like in 1928. And she said, I want to portray ladies. So she played an Asian woman in The Vermilion Pencil, 1922. The Purple Dawn in 23, a drug-addicted mother in Human Wreckage, then The Nightlife in Hollywood, Souls for Sale. She was expected to entertain these studio executives. So she learned to sing, dance, and play the ukulele. And because of her performance in The King on Main Street, she is the first person to dance the Charleston on film.
Really?
First person. Her techniques were documented in instructional guides because she was that good. And in 25, she starred in The Lost World. It was a science fiction adventure. In 27, she appeared in the successful Dress Parade, and she wrote a book, Military Mary.
Really?
Yeah. And then her career was declining. So she toured with a musical troupe for a while, trying to get her deal back on track, you know. In 29, she appeared in her first feature-length sound musical, The Broadway Melody, and she got a nomination for the Academy Award for Best Actress. And then they raised her salary at MGM from $500 a week to $3,000.
Oh, wow.
She was making more than the men.
Really? Back then? That barely happens now.
Yeah, and in 29, the Hollywood Review of 29, Chasing Rainbows, it earned her the musical title of the first musical comedy star.
Wow, cool.
1929. And again, her career was going down. So she got married in December of 29, She was semi-retired, and then she had a baby. In 1935, she moved to England, and she lived in England the rest of her life.
Really?
But during World War II, she worked as a script supervisor on films, and she worked for the American Red Cross. Then at the end of the war, she started acting again, and she was on BBC radio and drama companies. She's played small roles in British films. She did a lot of work on Her Majesty's. She starred in the James Bond thriller on Her Majesty's Secret Service in 69.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool.
And then, do you remember the John Schlesinger's Sunday, Bloody Sunday?
Yes.
She played the mother of Vanessa Redgrave.
Did she really? I didn't know that.
And she served as the dialect coach to Vanessa Redgrave.
Really?
Served as a dialect coach. Can you imagine that?
Wow, that's pretty cool.
She was a really cool person. She was a beautiful girl. And then she appeared in Osborne's play West of Suez in 71 and Aunt Pittypat in Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. How cool.
Yeah, and she played as an American lady in Vampires, 1974. She played in the TV ministries Edward and Mrs. Simpson in 78. And she continued, you know, for many years. And her final film was The Hunger in 1983.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm just sitting here thinking of all the changes that she would have seen. I mean, she started out when they were barely doing silent films, and she ended up, you know, by the time she was done acting and you know, whatever else, I mean, by the time you get to 1983, the changes, I mean, the special, well, we brought in sound, and then we brought in color, and then we brought in special effects, and then, I mean, I can't imagine just... It would be very rare and cool to go from where she started to where she ended and see all the advancements and the changes that had happened in film.
Yeah, in 1960, they put a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for her. It says Bessie Love. And, you know, portraits of Love are preserved in private collections, including those of the Smithsonian and the National Portrait Gallery.
Wow.
Yeah, and cartoonist Alex Gard did a caricature of her for Sardi's.
Really?
Yeah, and part of the Billy Rose Theater Division of the New York Public Library. So, you know, and she appeared in Playboy when she was 80 years old.
What? Really?
And an illustration of her as a young woman played in Playboy when she was 80 years old. Oh my gosh.
That's awesome. I would have never.
That is so awesome. Oh my gosh.
She's literally done it all in her career.
She did. And, you know, she taught Vanessa Redgrave a dialect on that movie. I can't even believe that.
Wow.
That she had to help her.
I'm just, and she's from Midland. That's pretty
she's
cool.
She's from Midland, Texas. Her name was Horton. And they changed it to Bessie Love because they wanted to love her and Bessie because the kids could pronounce it. Can you imagine?
At least it was thought out. I mean, they had a reason behind it. I think it's pretty cool. It's a neat story. And to have someone from Midland who is actually in Gone with the Wind, I didn't know. Maybe I don't know if anybody else knows or if I'm just the only one.
I don't
one.
Know either. I just found that this week.
Wow.
And said, oh my gosh, she's from Midland, Texas. She went there to the 12 years. She lived there 12 years. And, then they moved to New Mexico. Then they ended up in Hollywood. And I thought it was funny. I didn't know that Tom Mix was that early. And, you know, she was going there to meet him. I didn't know that he was back during the silent film.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he went back that far either. And the fact that he wasn't there probably worked in her favor, because then she got signed right then and there, didn't she? And
he signed her to a personal contract.
Yeah.
After he met her, and she had so many firsts. That was what was so great about her, you know. And
wow.
She was a neat person.
Yeah.
And starred in so many films before we ever had talkies. And then she went right on. And, you know, they said a lot of people didn't transfer from non-talking to talking.
Yeah.
They had a bad voice. They had something wrong. And I know a lot of actresses retired because when talkies came out, their voice wasn't good on film.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing has to change. You know, when you're in a silent movie, you know, it seems like, oh, they just, you know, do goofy things and make silly faces, and that's all there is. And so you don't have to talk convincingly, and you don't have to do, you know, all these other, you don't have, you know, the emotion just comes through the whatever you're doing on screen, and then that's it. But when you add in voices, and then, you know, you have to remember lines, and you have to hit your mark, and then you have, you know, once they added special effects, you know, you have to imagine, okay, what is going to be digitally inserted in here someplace so that your placement is right? And there's so much more to think about as it, you know, as it develops. And for her to be able to make each of those transitions between each of the additions is really, it's a big deal. It's
a big deal. And she was the first one to do a Charleston in film.
Yeah.
You know, she was working on everything, learning how to do everything. And that was just part of it. And then they documented it as to how to do it after she did it. I mean, it's funny.
It's hilarious. That's awesome.
And so she came from non-speaking all the way up to Gone with the Wind. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is really cool. And to be born in, what, 1898 and be in a movie in 1983? I mean, that's pretty
that's
cool.
Right. And to have her deal in Playboy magazine when she was 80 years old.
Yeah.
How many of us could stand that?
I know it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then what? She moved to the UK, kind of got out of acting, I guess retired, and then had a family and, you know, did whatever she did and worked at the Red Cross and, you know, all that stuff. And then gets back into it and has, you know, successful roles. I mean, it's so rare. For her to be able to do the things that she's done, I can't think of anybody else who has progressed that much during so many big dramatic changes in their career. It's awesome. Really,
she was an awesome actress. And Bessie Love, I mean, that was a heck of a name they chose for her.
Yeah, it is. Wow. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Have you ever tried to do the Charleston?
No, I haven't. I've watched it many a time, but I have never tried it.
Yeah, we see it done, you know, when they have the big competition in It's a Wonderful Life. So I thought I'd get up in the living room and I'd try it. And
how'd it work out?
Oh, it looked like I had to go to the hospital, so it wasn't pretty.
You need to take dance lessons to do that, I think.
Nope, I think...
I went to Arthur Murray and took dance lessons years ago.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I always believe if I'm going to do anything, you have to have a professional show you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
I'm a firm believer that, yeah.
Well, so you're like almost a professional dancer on top of everything else.
Oh, no. No, I just wanted to be able to do ballroom dancing.
Wow. I bet that was fun. And did you go to balls and do some dancing?
They had these deals. They had dance deals where you could practice, where you could meet other people. My husband and I went, and we had a great time.
Boy, that sounds awesome.
And they would have shows. And you have to pay for all this, whatever they want you to do. That's why Arthur Murray's is so successful. I don't know if they're still in business, but back then they would say, okay, we're going to have a show. Now you have to have this sort of dress or you have to have that, and you have to pay for it, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They charged They charged extra dance lessons for that, let me tell you.
Wow. Well, look at that. Yeah. We learned a little something extra. Neat.
Yeah. I'd forgot about that.
Wow. That's cool. okay. Well, before we wrap, I know with a life settlement, there are two risks. What's the first one?
First risk is it could go over, and if you would, you would have to pay premiums. So you always need to know up front how much the premium is on a policy. Sometimes there's not any. One of these policies that matured had no premiums.
Oh, wow. Really?
And lots of times if people are ill, they have a little rider on their life policy that says if you get ill, there's no premiums. So sometimes we're able to buy a policy like that, not very often. But that is your biggest risk is your premiums.
Okay.
Another risk that you need to know about is it is not, you cannot cash it in before the time. You get paid when it matures.
All right.
And remember, you must be accredited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house.
With annuities, there's not really the same kind of qualifications. There's not really the same risk. It's just really kind of, it's there, and they check things. But as far as risks, can you think of any? I can't think of any with annuity.
It's a solid deal. Your principal's safe. There's not a lot of speculation, so therefore there's not a lot of risk.
Yeah. All right, and the 16% is still there. So
anybody that's coming in right now, they're going to get that bonus in addition to what it makes that first year. And if they put money in second year and third year, they're going to still get that bonus for right now.
Cool. Yeah, I understand why in recent months you've had people call up with recent renewed interest in annuities, because I get it. It's a conservative investment where it doesn't take much time. You don't have to worry about losing your principal. You can go about living your life while that sits in the background and makes money. So it totally makes sense. So. All right. So anybody that's interested, maybe they want more information. Maybe they want to just go ahead and get started. Maybe they want to think about get started, but they've got some questions. Whatever, wherever they are, they do need to call you, make an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what's your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.